Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Well, welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio. I'm really glad that you have called in, and as always, we have really an exciting show this morning. I'm Cecile Burriel, and this part of the Women Leading the Way is called Serving Up Diversity, and that's what we're going to do today. Our topic today is employment discrimination or harassment education and training, abusive conduct. And this is AB 2053, which is here in California. And it's really interesting because we also have a law called AB 1825, and it's very similar. And our guest today is going to talk about that and explain to us so we can understand what this new addition is. And our guest today is Chris Olmstead. He is with Ogletree, Deakins, Nash, Smoke, and Stewart. And he handles employment law and litigation. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks, Cecile. Thanks for having me on your show.
Oh, I'm so excited because these are areas that I really like covering because it's areas that I do, and I know obviously you do. And as we all know, currently there is a law on the books known as AB 1825, where California employers with 50 or more employees are required to provide sexual and general harassment training and for prevention. And now there's this new AB 2053 that is, it seems like, an addition to this training to include prevention of abusive conduct or bullying, which I'm really excited to talk to you about, particularly the bullying side of that, Chris. So would you explain to our listeners the differences between AB 1825 and AB 2053?
Yes. So AB 1825 is a law that's been on the books for a number of years here in California, and it mandates that employers with 50 or more employees provide periodic training to supervisors regarding the topic of sexual harassment and training them on how to identify it, how to respond to it, and what to do as a company to prevent that sort of thing from happening in the workplace. As you mentioned, it applies to companies with 50 or more employees, and the training requirement is that every 2 years supervisors need to go through this training. So again, that law has been on the books in California for a number of years, and companies of all sizes have been providing harassment prevention training for their supervisors at a minimum.
I believe also that when a new supervisor comes on board with a company, they also are required to go through that training.
You're correct. Within 6 months of being either promoted or hired, the supervisor needs to participate in the training.
Okay.
So AB 2053 is an amendment to the existing sexual harassment prevention training, and it adds a new component to the training. So it's in addition to what is already required. And that's the topic that you mentioned for today, and that is that the new component is training supervisors regarding abusive conduct, which many of us commonly call bullying in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the new component.
Which is really interesting that now here in California they're addressing this. So as you explain, if you will explain how this came about, if there is a knowledge of how it came about and what it's going to look like.
Sure. Well, the topic of bullying has been has captured the public interest or public attention for a number of years throughout the country, and mostly what we're seeing in it is in the context of schools. So we have kids who are being bullied by other students, and that gets a lot of attention. Sometimes it has tragic results when someone gets out of control and things become violent. And so most schools these days have some policy in effect that is intended to protect kids from bullying and to encourage kids to come forward and do something about it before it gets out of hand. So that's not the only sphere in which the public has been providing some attention. There's the workplace as well. And there's been some effort for a few years now in different jurisdictions, different states, to implement some form of anti-abusive conduct legislation. And so we've seen that in a number of different states. The legislation that has been introduced in actually 23 other states, and so far, California is the only one that's actually implemented any law that has specific bearing on the topic.
Mm-hmm. May I ask you a question then? Because in the past when we talk about bullying, and I know with California particularly, there was really a hesitation to even get involved with that aspect in the workplace, because how do you really make a determination of what's bullying and what's legal, what's illegal? And I know once upon a time I was talking with an attorney general in California, and she said, we're never going to ever let this become a law, because if it becomes a law, then what we're doing is telling people how to run their businesses.
Well, I see what you're talking about, and I think that is a practical limitation on going further than this law currently goes. So to be clear, though, the current law, AB 2053, does not prohibit bullying in the workplace. What it does is require that supervisors receive training on the topic, perhaps better equipping them with ways to deal with it when it arises in the workplace, but it doesn't give a so-called victim of bullying in the workplace recourse in the courts. And the comments that you may have heard regarding the practicalities, I agree with that. It could be very difficult to define exactly what bullying is and under what circumstances an individual would have recourse in the courts to do something about it when they feel like they've been the victim of misconduct by another employee. So to clarify that, I suppose we could look at the specific definition that the law, AB 2053, provides for abusive conduct.
Okay.
Okay, so abusive conduct, as defined in this new training law, is conduct in the workplace that is done with malice that a reasonable person would find hostile, offensive, and unrelated to an employer's legitimate business interests. The law specifies that the conduct may include repeated infliction of verbal abuse, such as the use of derogatory remarks, insults, epithets, verbal or physical conduct that a reasonable person would find threatening, intimidating, or humiliating, or gratuitous sabotage of or undermining of a person's work performance. The law goes on to say that a single act shall not constitute abusive conduct unless especially severe or mm-hmm. egregious.
And that seems to be similar to like hostile environment.
You're right. There's similarities there. The major distinction being that under state and federal anti-sexual harassment law, a hostile work environment needs to be connected to someone's mistreatment on account of sex or gender, or whatever
right.
other protected class we're dealing with. So if someone is going to single out and harass a woman because she's a woman in the workplace, and let's say mm-hmm. that the men don't want there to be a woman in the workplace, And so they're going to let the woman know by treating her poorly. They're harassing her on account of sex. Or the other common definition of sexual harassment, it has some sexual component to it. So individuals are telling inappropriate jokes, or there's unwanted romantic overtures going on. It's of a sexual nature. Right. But that goes back to one of the protected classes under state and federal law, which is anti-discrimination and anti-harassment based on sex or gender. This definition of abusive conduct is not tied to any specific protected class under the law. It's basically a good behavior law, indicating that if there are coworkers or supervisors that are basically being extraordinarily mean to another coworker, that would count as abusive conduct. And that's, again, what the training law is aimed at trying to minimize.
That's going to be interesting to see how all of this plays out. And, you know, I have worked with companies that have had bullying concerns. And when you look at overall, you know, what is a bully or what does a bully do, you know, I guess there's some similarities when people are bullying others to bully outside of the workplace. For example, that they tend to have their own five components. They test, they target, they test, and it goes on through. They touch and all those things. Now, as part of the training, is that what would be included in some of the training for supervisors?
Well, that's a good question. The exact components of the training are not defined by the law. The law just says that here's a definition of abusive conduct, and supervisors should receive training on this topic, but it doesn't go so far as to describe exactly what the topics of training should be beyond that. The state of California, one of the agencies, is currently preparing regulations that will put just a tiny bit more detail into that. But for the most part, it's going to be up to employers to design and present the training as best they can.
So is all the abusive conduct piece of this going to be just bullying, or is it going to expand out? And I think you'd started to say that, and I had interrupted you with a question.
So the training is going to be on the topic of abusive conduct, which we're by shorthand referring to as bullying in the workplace. And and so the topic of training will be for supervisors to understand the definition of what abusive conduct is, and perhaps some recommendations for what to do if the conduct is identified in the workplace.
Okay. So if we're looking at part of, an aspect of that is bullying. Okay, I get that. And would it be any other kind of inappropriate sexual behaviors?
I suppose it could, but in the event that we're talking about some sort of unwanted sexual conduct, we're back to the classic definition of sexual harassment, which is already a subject of training in California. But beyond that, it's also illegal conduct. It's unlawful. And employers have an affirmative obligation to do something about it. They need to prevent it from happening in the first place. They need to respond to it if it's known to be happening in the workplace. And there can be civil liability to a company who doesn't appropriately respond to this sort of conduct in the workplace. On the other hand, if we're talking about abusive conduct that has no sexual component to it or no other component that is already protected by law, then although the company is obligated now in California to provide training on the topic, there's no separate obligation to do something about it. One would hope that a company is keenly interested in preventing and responding to bullying in the workplace, but as it stands right now, there's no legal obligation for it to do so.
Mm-hmm. And you were saying also that some other states are looking at this, but they haven't come forward with any detailed law on it. But California,
my understanding
has.
That there's a couple dozen other jurisdictions have introduced legislation on the topic. The legislation has not passed over the past few years. I think that the effort has been to, in some instances, to make the conduct unlawful, and that hasn't been the case here in California so far. But again, I guess the takeaway is that it's something that a number of different jurisdictions are looking at, but so far they haven't gone so far as to implement any laws. California is really on the front line of this.
I think California is often on the front line.
That's true.
With so many of the laws, you know, and that the federal government sometimes looks to see what California is going to do, and then they decide whether they're going to handle it or not. Is this, in bringing that topic up, is this also going to be a federal law, or has that even come forward at all?
As far as I know, there's been no developments on the federal front on this issue. Federal law, of course, just like many states, including California, has anti-discrimination, anti-harassment laws on the books. And so sexual harassment, for example, is unlawful under federal law, just as it is under California law and many other states' law. But
right.
I'm not aware of any developments on the federal level where there's an effort to expand unlawful conduct to include abusive conduct or bullying conduct in the workplace.
Okay. And then, you know, there obviously this training is going to be for supervisors, so they'll know how to work with employees, especially if an employee comes forward. And as I think we all know, a lot of companies do sexual harassment training and appropriate workplace behavior kind of training to employees. Now, is this something that it would be recommended, say, when supervisors are getting all this education, that they know how to, or say an employee comes forward, that will the training include them saying, okay, here's how you handle an employee who comes forward with an allegation?
Yes, again, the law doesn't specify that. It just, again, says training shall be had on this topic. But I think that would be a prudent step for employers to take, is that if we're going to educate supervisors on the topic of abusive conduct, then perhaps they should be given some tools and some education on how to handle something if it comes up, if there's a complaint, or if they observe something in the workplace, what, if anything, should they be doing in response to that. So I think that would be a prudent topic to cover.
Mm-hmm.
And again, even setting aside any legal mandates, I think almost every business out there would agree that this is not the sort of conduct that would be tolerated under general policies of conduct. Who wants to have employees, one employee abusing another? At a minimum, it interferes with business operations. It affects morale, and in some instances can be dangerous. So I assume that most companies will have already implemented general policies that would prohibit this sort of conduct, and they would want their supervisors to know what to do in the event that some employee is misbehaving.
Right. And would there be a need, do you think, because as I said, I know some companies, well, there's two parts of this, but there are some companies who do training for their employees also. And so I guess my question then is, should there be some kind of information that is given to the employees in a training session for them to look out for?
That's a good question. So in my opinion, I think it's important to have training for all employees, not only supervisors but non-supervisors. And so it's always been my recommendation, when we're just talking about the topic of sexual harassment prevention, that supervisors should receive the two-hour training, but also non-supervisory staff should receive some level of training on the topic as well. Perhaps not a two-hour session, that's
right,
too much, but some some shorter amount of training. So at a minimum, they're aware of what the policies say, they're aware that they've got legal rights and that they're protected, and they're aware of the company's strong interest in having them come forward as soon as they believe that they're being mistreated. So the company has a good opportunity to respond to the concerns and deal with any harassment immediately. So I would say that the same concept ought to apply on the topic of abusive conduct, that it's one thing to have the supervisors aware of the definition and prepared to handle situations as they arise, but I think beyond that, I think employees should receive a definition of abusive conduct as well, and they should be instructed about what the company would expect them to do in the event that they either observe it or feel that they're a victim of it.
Yes, because we definitely want them, if somebody does that, you want them to come forward. What about those who are under 50 employees, the smaller businesses, the medium-sized, the smaller businesses? What would you suggest that they might do?
I think smaller businesses should consider following the lead, although they're not obligated under the law to provide this sort of training. As we said
right.
several times, it applies to larger companies. You have to have 50 or more employees for the mandatory training law to apply. I've always thought that it makes good sense for smaller businesses to take up some form of prevention training as well. Smaller companies should note that they're just as vulnerable to civil lawsuits for harassment and discrimination
yes.
as larger companies are. It's just that the training obligation is imposed only on larger businesses. And so smaller businesses are just as vulnerable, if not more vulnerable, to lawsuits. Certainly a smaller company might have to struggle more to afford to defend itself in court than a very large business. So I think all the more reason that smaller businesses should volunteer to have this training for supervisors to prevent this sort of conduct from happening.
Yeah, and then possibly include their own employees, too, depending upon the size of their organization.
Right, yeah. So to add to that thought, my general recommendation, at least to my clients, would be that there would be separate training so that supervisors would be in one session and the non-supervisor employees would
yes.
be in a separate session. I think that makes a lot of sense. But in any event, I think everyone should receive some education on the topic.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I know I've done training with supervisors and employees. And what some companies and some of the smaller companies will do is they'll do like an hour with everybody there, and then they separate it out to get to address it individually, well, based on the status, whether they're a supervisor or whether they're an employee. And it's interesting because it appears, and you know that I'm an HR professional, it appears that more small businesses are wanting to know with these laws, even though it may not totally meet with what they're doing, but when they hear about like the sexual harassment and general harassment and others, I find that they're getting to want more of the training so they'll know how to protect not only themselves but their employees also. And it seems they're starting to turn in this direction more than they used to. Do you find that the case at all?
I think that is the case. I think first and foremost, business leaders are very concerned about their employees, and they don't want to have a work environment where this sort of thing happens. So it's primarily out of concern of just protecting employees from.
Yeah.
from misconduct. And beyond that, of course, meeting their legal obligations or, I think, more to the point, avoiding the potential legal liabilities, the cost and time involved in dealing with a legal claim for a small business can be substantial. So I think that there's an inherent trend or push to do what can be done to prevent these sort of things from happening in the first place. And I think training is one of the best ways to minimize these legal risks.
It absolutely is. And we're almost out of time, but would you kind of talk a little bit about what you do and give our listeners a chance to get your email address, and if you'd be willing to, if somebody wanted to contact you, your phone number.
Sure. I'm an attorney with Ogletree Deacons, and we're a national law firm. We've got 41 offices and probably 650 lawyers, and we specialize in employment law for businesses, for management. And so part of what we do and part of what I do is give advice to business owners and managers on how to comply with state and federal law and deal with issues as they arise in the workplace. And the other part of what I do and what our firm does is in the event a company is facing a legal claim in court or before an administrative agency, we represent the business and help them deal with those concerns. My email address for those that have questions is my name, Christopher.Olmsted, O-L-M-S-T-E-D, at OgletreeDeacons.com, O-G-L-E-T-R-E-E-D-E-A-K-I-N-S.com.
Fantastic. I really appreciate your coming on the program this morning. And listeners, if you do have some questions, he has given you his information as to how you can reach him. And, you know, thank you so much, Chris, for doing this. And I hope you have a wonderful season for the rest of the year, holiday time.
Thank you for having me on your show. It was a pleasure to talk to you and your listeners. And same to you. I hope you have a happy holiday.
Take care.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.